This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at REACH 2017, held on March 23 and 24, 2017, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you, Ryan. Well, this is a small group, which I assumed it probably would be. This topic sort of fits a niche and often a time period in an organization. So it's kind of the, if I would describe it, where it falls in an organization, it's often somewhere between, that's a great idea, we should start an organization, and, you have the layers of board and administration and personnel and all that, you have, all that structure in place. Somewhere between sort of those two points comes, at some point we probably should have an audit. But what's that mean? You hear people talking about it and, oh yeah, it's the audit again. It's kind of what people talk about. Well, what is it actually like? So this afternoon, because it's a small group, I'm going to let you introduce yourself and maybe say a little bit about why you're interested in this topic and why you chose to come. First off, I'm going to take the privilege of introducing Mark. Mark Payne is an auditor with Payne Wade & Schmitz in South Carolina, and he's an excellent resource. If you have questions about what an audit's like, he's been doing auditing, I was going to say, for more years than I've been alive. I don't know if that's it. That might be a little strange. Mark has a wealth of knowledge. I am privileged to know Mark. Glad to have him here this afternoon. But maybe I'll start over here. I'll go across the first row and let you all introduce yourself. Name what organization you're with and why this topic is of interest to you.
Well, I'm Laverne Miller from Center Church, Partridge, Hutchinson, Kansas. And we had a church treasurer for 40 years who then was replaced by a young man who had a business degree and thought we were off to a good start, which he later actually didn't last very long. But anyhow, one day he said, I think it'd be great if we'd get our books audited. And I kind of closed my eyes on the inside. And so I thought, well, maybe we better come and find out what I need to know. Because it hadn't occurred to me that we should get our church books audited.
All right. Excellent. Glad to have you here.
Okay. I'm Dave Everly. I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania, just down the road here. Ordained deacon, interested in church finances and things like that to increase my knowledge of what an audit is like.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you.
I'm Ruben Saltzus. I'm here under Charity Christian Missions, but I'm also treasurer for Light of Christ Ministries, which is an urban ministry in Lancaster here. We're registered as a church, and so the annual audit isn't required, but I would like to do an audit. So,
excellent.
I'm Peter Miller, and personal interest, I guess I was putting on an auditing board, so to learn what an auditor should do.
Sounds great. Well, glad you are here. Just a bit about my experience and why I'm interested in this topic. So, I was hired as the business office manager at Faith Builders. Part of that responsibility was the annual audit. Now, I was hired at the end of our fiscal year, which means that our audit was coming up within the next month after I was hired. The previous office manager was there, to be there through the audit because it was his books that were being audited. I wasn't responsible. I wasn't sure what all the auditor was going to ask about. So we came into the audit, and the audit, it just sounds like a big deal because, you hear about make sure that the auditors, don't see too much, or, make sure, all this stuff, sort of this aura that surrounds the audit. We came into the audit, and auditors came in, and they had done it for several years, and so they sat down with us and asked some questions and looked at a few records, and one day they were out. And a month or two later, we get the audit report. Oh, it's a clean report. I'm like, wait, really? That's all that's involved in an audit? Huh. Well, that's not such a big deal after all. And so the next year, we decided to get a different auditor. We had some questions about the previous auditor. He had done it for a number of years, but we were really wondering if he was, you know, doing his job the way he should and asking all the questions and so forth. Well, coming into the second audit, I figured I kind of knew what to expect. You know, this wasn't a big deal. They asked for a few things. You give it to them. They answer some questions, and they go, and they write up the report based on the financial records you give them, and not a big deal. The next audit was a thorough audit. They came in, and they had never done it before, so they wanted to see our records. The process took about a week. They looked at everything. They were pulling out personnel contracts. They were pulling out receipts. They were pulling out, records of student records to make sure that we were billing the correct amounts to the students, you know, based on our fee schedule. They were asking tough questions, and I'm like, oh, maybe this is more what an audit is supposed to be like. And yes, that is more what an audit is supposed to be like. They talk about internal controls. They talk about all sorts of things. We got a clean audit report, very happy with the report, and very happy with the thoroughness of their job. That's what you want from an auditor. You don't want somebody that's just going to come in, glance over it, and, oh, yeah, it looks good, write up a report, and go away. What you're paying for is advice. And so as much as possible, pick the auditor's brain. Now, how can we do things better? How can we improve this organization? How can we be better stewards of what God has given us? How can we demonstrate integrity in our organization? So that kind of interested me in audits. I wish going into it that I had known more about what to expect. Would have helped me to prepare a little better. But that's the point of this afternoon, is to talk a bit about what to expect and what it looks like to actually go through an audit. So, a few definitions to begin with. What is an annual audit? To speak about an annual audit, really, it goes back to the goals of an audit. So, what are some of the goals of an audit? And one of them is definitely the verification of your financial reports. I mean, that's one of the primary ones. So, the question is, are the reports that you are issuing, are they accurately reflecting what's going on? So is it accurately reflecting the income that's coming into your organization? Is it accurately reflecting the expenses that are going out of your organization? Is it accurately reflecting what assets you have in the organization, what your inventory level is, what your assets are, and just various things like that? So the verification of financial reports, they also look at internal controls, and that's very related in terms of, okay, what do you have in place to make sure that these reports are accurate? So do you have, when you take the church offering, do you have two people counting the offering? Or does one person take it to the back room and you hope what comes out is the same amount that goes in? What kind of controls do you have in place for expenses? Is somebody writing out checks to just pay the bills? Or do you have a second person getting the bank statement and compare and looking over it and saying, wait, what was that expense for? Like, why did we pay this person? Do you have that type of internal control? So a good audit is going to ask hard questions about your internal controls, and it's going to be able to help you develop the internal controls that are good for your organization. It can be tough in smaller organizations or church settings where you have a lot of turnover. Either one of those settings, it can be very tough to have adequate internal controls. When you have one person who gets the mail, deposits the checks, and writes out all the checks and files the bills, how do you have appropriate internal controls there? And that's a whole another topic. But a good audit is going to look at those, and it's going to help you think about what is good for your organization and how can we develop some of these controls. Another thing that the audit is going to look at increasingly, there's demand for auditors looking at the viability of the organization. So how viable is this organization? Is this organization in good financial standing? Will they be able to continue for the next several years and so forth? That is much more important in for-profit audits, where you have a business that people are investing in and they want an assurance of some sort that, yes, this organization is in good financial situation and will most likely continue over the years. That has been trickling down some to nonprofits. There's an increase in the an increase of interest in the audit standard makers for more of that in the nonprofit world. Ultimately, you wind up with an audit report. Is sort of what the goal is. And an audit report could look like this. This is very likely similar to what you would get from an auditor. This is Faith Builders' most recent report. And you're going to have a couple key reports in there that will largely mirror reports that you would be looking at as board members or church members and so forth. You're going to have a statement of financial position, which is similar to a balance sheet. It's going to say, okay, here are the assets you have, here are the liabilities you have. The money that's left over, you know, some of it might be restricted to a certain purpose. So a certain amount of it is restricted to this certain use, and then a certain amount of what's left over is unrestricted funds. And the audit report's going to detail that and put it in a very standard format for the organization. They're also going to have a statement of activities, which is similar to what is also known as a profit and loss. It's going to show the income that came in. It's going to show the expenses that went out and how those are designated and so forth. You're going to have a statement of cash flows, which if you're in business, you might be familiar with that. So it varies depending on how complex it gets, depending on your organization. But that's often a report that's in there. And you're going to have notes to the financial statements, notes that are going to say things like, what does the organization do? Who are the organization's big donors, possibly? Or how long do they depreciate assets? Is it, do they depreciate assets over a certain number of years or over a long period of time? Those types of things are going to affect the financial reports. And so if there are things that people need to know as they look at the financial reports, those are the kinds of things that would show up in the notes, typically. It could be a page or two. It could be 10, 15, 20 pages of notes following the financial statement. And then you may or may not have what's called a statement of functional expenses. And so it's somewhat similar to the statement of activities, but it focuses on expenses and divides them out in a bit different way in the report. So that essentially is what an audit is. An audit's looking for, verification of your financial reports, making sure that the financial reports are accurate. They're going to be looking at your internal controls, whether your organization is viable, and then in the end, they'll be issuing an audit report. The audit report also includes, right in the front, includes a letter from the auditor saying whether they found major problems in the organization. Essentially, a clean audit is when you get a letter like that that says that they're giving what is called an unqualified opinion. In other words, not to say the auditor is unqualified to give his opinion, but saying that this opinion, there's no qualifications to it. In other words, they don't have to say it's mostly accurate, but here are a few qualifications. An unqualified opinion means it's you're above board for what they can tell, and everything looks good in your financial reports. So several things an annual audit is not. As we're talking about an annual audit today, an annual audit is not an investigation conducted by the government. Yes, the IRS does occasionally audit organizations, and the reason they would audit a nonprofit organization, so they audit for-profit organizations because they want to make sure you're paying your taxes. They audit nonprofits to make sure that you are doing things that qualify you to be tax exempt. So if you're engaging in political activity, that's a no-no. If you are running a for-profit business and pretending to be a nonprofit, that's also a no-no. There's various things that could cause them to question whether you should be a tax exempt organization. Yes, they do conduct those audits, but that's not what we're talking about today. It's a whole other animal and won't be addressed today. An annual audit is not necessarily a way to uncover fraud either. So people think, well, if you get a clean audit, well, that means there's no fraud in the organization. Actually, the Association of Certified Fraud Examiners says that over 40% of fraud is discovered because of someone in the organization giving a tip, notifying a hotline or whatever it is. And because audits rely on documents that you supply, an audit is not necessarily the best method for detecting fraud. Because if there's fraud in the organization, the documents you supply are fraudulent. They're going to be depending on these fraudulent documents and aren't necessarily going to detect the fraud. Now, something's obviously out of whack. Well, they hopefully could detect that. But it's not necessarily a good way of uncovering fraud. Fraud is much better combated by training employees and teaching them what fraud looks like. So here's what it might look like. Here's what suspicious behavior might look like if someone's trying to cover up fraud. It's a much better way of uncovering fraud. An annual audit is also not a measurement of an organization's efficiency or effectiveness. A clean audit merely means your financial statements accurately reflect what went on. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Is it a good thing or a bad thing that you spent this much on fundraising? Is it a good thing or a bad thing that you spent this much on salaries? Or it varies depending on the organization, but an audit is simply going to say, here's what is, and here's an accurate report of what is. We look through the necessary documents to confirm that these are accurate reports, but it's not necessarily saying that the organization is really doing well at what they want to do. So, several things that an audit is not. So, looking at an audit, why would or why should I get an audit? And that's always a question that people bring up. Well, should I get an audit? Why should I get an audit? Several reasons to get an audit. One reason is definitely that state requirement. In a lot of states, if you are a 501c3 organization, generally does not apply to churches, but if you are a 501c3 organization, a lot of times there is a requirement to have an audit once your organization reaches a certain size. So at Faith Builders, being in Pennsylvania, you're required to have an audit if donations you receive in your organization are greater than $300,000 in a year. You are then required to have an annual audit. Something that the Secretary of State requires. So that's state requirement is definitely one reason to have an audit, and you can check with generally the Secretary of State in your state will have an ID, can tell you what that threshold might be.
And Dennis, if I could.
Yes.
And it just doesn't depend on, in those particular things that you're referring to, it doesn't depend necessarily on the state where you're located. It would be the states where you're actually making solicitations according to their state law definition of solicitation. So you may be in Pennsylvania, their threshold may be $300,000, but you may be soliciting in another state, and their threshold may be $200,000. So you have to be mindful for where you're actually, your entire scope of your operations.
Yeah. Excellent point, and thank you for bringing that out, Mark. So yeah, it does not only depend on the one or two states that you might be, actually conducting operations. But yeah, if you are soliciting donations from other states, those other states might have other requirements for your organization in order to allow you to solicit donations in those states. I will also say just briefly that the whole charitable solicitation laws and what states you need to be registered in and when you need to register and things like that is also a huge topic. Organizations that solicit in a lot of different states, that is something to be aware of. There are a lot of rules out there in various states. Most of the states are different as to when you need to register, if you're regularly sending newsletters to a state, if you are, some states even get as tough as saying if you have a website that's accessible in that state and you collect donations on your website, you're soliciting in that state and you need to register.
It's not just, it can be printed, it can be even verbal solicitations by organizations, management or employees. It's emails, it's a whole host of things that qualify as solicitation.
Right.
Ads in the budget.
Right. Ads in online things and so forth. Can be quite a topic. Thank you for bringing that up. So, state laws. How big can you get before you are required by the states to various states that you operate or solicit donations in, required by them to have an audit? Varies a lot from state to state. Another reason you might get an audit is federal requirements. So if you are getting grants from the federal government for your organization. They might require an audit, and that often is if you are a certain size, but it depends on the grant as far as when they might require that audit. And that is if I understand it correctly, it might also be a different sort of audit. They might require certain things in the audit report.
Generally, you want to run from those.
You want to run from those. Okay. A lot of organizations don't get a lot of federal funding. Or most of them probably don't get any federal funding. But it is a reason that you might have to get an audit. One of the biggest ones, I would say, one of the biggest reasons that people get an audit is because of the accountability and transparency factor that an audit brings. It's a way to demonstrate to your donors that your organization is serious about accountability. It's a way of saying, you know, we welcome scrutiny in our organization. It's not natural for people to welcome scrutiny necessarily in financial things. And yet, as a nonprofit organization, I just came out of Merle Herr's talk, and he was talking about how the board is they are not the owners of the organization. The board is simply representatives of the constituency who cares about and owns this organization. And an audit is a way to demonstrate that we care about the financial, the way the financial the structure of the organization, and we welcome scrutiny from outside skilled people. It's also a way to ensure transparency within the organization as well as with people outside the organization. And I would also say that speaking from someone who worked in a nonprofit organization, knowing that I'm going to need to defend my entries to an auditor at the end of the year helps me stay on track. It helps me realize that, you know, maybe I should research a little bit better before I just enter. I think that's right. Knowing that it might come up and you have to defend it, it helps keep the people in the organization on track, which is generally not a bad thing. So what does the process look like? And here we get to probably what you really came here for. What does it look like, and how do I prepare for it? So in your handout, there's a bit of a diagram there that shows kind of how this cycle works. The first thing generally is that the board or ministers, already know in the case of a church, decides that, okay, yes, we are going to go ahead and get an audit done for our church. They generally would appoint a board audit committee, so there'd be a certain sector of the board that their job would be to find an auditor, communicate with them, get quotes and so forth, and they would be then the official committee of the board that the auditor would interact with. In some cases, the entire board deliberates about it, and that works too. Best practice is to contact at least two or three auditors to get a feel for kind of the price and the suitability of an auditor for your organization. Like I mentioned at the beginning, not all auditors are created equal. Some of them do their job very thoroughly and very well. Others, not so much. Just as a side note, we found out several years down the road, I got a call from the office of the first auditor who had audited our books, and they said, hey, we have a couple files here in our filing cabinet that we think belong to you. The John McMahon died very recently, very suddenly, of alcohol-related illnesses, and so his business is disbanding. Please stop in for your files. And I'm like, really? What's that about? So I stop in, and while they had, you know, some background documents and so forth, they were just getting rid of everything because he was essentially the business. I mean, he was operating pretty much on his own with a few secretaries, and found out that it was impending that he was getting ready to get shut down by the AICPA, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, because he was not doing his job, was not filling out the necessary paperwork, was not asking all the right questions, and found out that, oh, okay, so my impression, based on how little bit of time he spent at our organization, actually was well-founded. Not all auditors are created equal, and you want to do your job, because an audit is not cheap, and you want to make sure that what you get is going to be a quality audit and that the auditor is going to ask the right questions and so forth. The auditors, just to give you an audit bid, the auditors are going to ask quite a number of questions about your organization. So they're going to want to know how complex your organization is. It's likely they want to see a copy of your financial reports, which is going to tell them a bit how well organized your organization is. Do you have the books in the kind of shape where they can come in and, yeah, it makes sense because it's formatted just like you know, reports should be, or is this something where, they're going to have quite a bit of work helping you develop processes and develop how you should be keeping these books and so forth. So that will also give them an idea as to how long it's going to take them and what their fee should be. But get quotes from two or three auditors, a couple people that are local and so forth. I will mention briefly at the end of my talk a bit more about choosing an auditor and just a few questions you should ask and things to think about when it comes time to choose an auditor. So the first thing is going to be to get audit bids. So find out what their fees are. And then once you do that, once you've decided on an auditor, they will then give you what's called an engagement letter. So the engagement letter is going to outline the things that you are responsible to give the auditor. It's going to outline the things that the auditor is responsible for to your organization. Quite frankly, this letter, as much as anything, is a sort of mitigating the auditor's liability. Making sure that there's a document, a signed document, saying what his responsibilities are and what your responsibilities are. So if somebody has questions, you go back to a document, you sign this, so, you know, here it is. It will also list the fees to be charged. So they will put it in print there that, you know, typically they say that the audit fees will not exceed such and such a price. Just to give you a hard and fast number there that you know it won't go beyond that. Soon after your fiscal year ends comes what's called the field work. And this is where the bulk of the audit is done, at least from the organization's perspective. The length of time that they are working on the field work is going to depend a lot on the size of your organization, the complexity, and so forth. But it's typically conducted on-site, so they're going to want to come out and come to your office, take a look at your paperwork. It might require them to visit various locations. If you're a mission organization that has overseas locations, the auditor might need to travel to overseas locations to verify things and so forth. The auditor is going to, before he gets there, he'll be able to supply a list of things that he wants to look at. And so I would ask him before he comes, okay, so what do you want me to have available for you before you get here? Some of the things that our auditor typically says is, well, I need to see the board meeting minutes. So he's going to read the minutes from the last year just to get a feel for what's the board discussing. Did they approve any huge building projects? Did they approve hiring, you know, a bunch of new employees, things like that, just to give them a feel for what the board's discussing and what decisions they've reached, what the auditor is going to be looking for when he comes. What are the big issues in the organization that are being discussed? The auditor is also going to want to see, he's going to want copies of your bank statements. He's going to want to see a list of capital assets, so any big purchases that your organization has purchased. He's going to want to see payroll tax returns. So if you have people on payroll, he's going to want copies of all your quarterly payroll tax returns. He's going to want a list of a lot of other things, too. It basically depends on your organization as to what exactly he wants to see. When he gets there, he's probably going to spend some time reading the board meeting minutes. Now, I'm speaking based on my experience. Different auditors, I'm sure, do things differently. But our auditor generally comes in and says, all right, so I want to read the board meeting minutes, and then we're going to go into analytics. So then he pulls a copy of our financial records, and he compares them to the previous year's financial records and asks questions about why they're different. So this year, your donations really spiked. Do you have any idea why? Oh, well, yeah, actually, we did this big building project, and so a lot of people were giving to that. Oh, okay, that makes sense. Why... all of a sudden the special events fees went way up. Well, yeah, we had Reach this year. You know, all the attendees were paying for to go to Reach. Well, that makes sense. We don't have this every year, and so there's going to be these anomalies. But what he's looking for is, are there things that are incorrect in the records? Are there ways that people are putting something incorrectly into the financial records? Are these reports accurately reflecting what is going on? They are going to, and then they're going to do sampling of financial records. So they're going to look at, just to give an example, they want to see a copy, they want to see a list of all the checks that you wrote out last year. And they randomly select every 15th check, and they want to see a receipt in the file for that check. Just that kind of thing. Are you keeping proper documentation to prove that this was a legitimate expense for the organization? They're also going to look at your payroll contracts, for example. So if you hired people and you have them on staff, they're going to compare your reports that you send into the government with the contract that you have signed with that worker. Did you actually pay them what you said you're going to pay them? They're going to look at your fee schedule. If you operate a school, for example, they're going to look at your list of students and your list of what you say your fees are. And did you actually charge them what you said your fees are? You'd be amazed how often stuff comes up that, I'm not sure what went on there. they always somehow, they have this uncanny ability to pick the ones that you'd say, oh, no, not that one. it's amazing what auditors can get. And that's what their job is to find if there's any anomalies there, if there's any where you're not going according to your policies and so forth. They're also going to attempt to tie in official records to your financial records. So they're going to be looking at bank statements. Do those match what's in your financial records? Do your credit card statements match what you're showing in the bank, in the accounting software and so forth? Their goal is to confirm that what you say you received and spent is actually what you received and spent, and that you have proper documentation to prove that that's what you received and spent. And so they're going to be looking at internal controls as well. So, like I mentioned, with donation income, if you have cash coming in, are there two people counting it? If you have a lot of donations coming through the mail, how do you know that they're all making it into the financial records and then into the bank? For expenses, who writes and signs the checks? Do you have a proper procedure for that? Who opens the bank statement? And do they properly look over that bank statement to make sure there's no expenditures on that bank statement that should not be there? So they're going to be looking at internal controls. They're also going to be most likely running through a questionnaire of sorts in relation to fraud. So I mentioned that they're not there necessarily to detect fraud, but if there is blatant fraud, they definitely will, want to know about it and want to try to notify the board that there's something going on here. They're going to be asking questions like, if you were to steal from the organization, how would you do it? If you were to misstate the financial reports, how would you do it? And not get caught. Do you know of or have any reason to suspect fraud in the organization? Has any employee's lifestyle suddenly changed? Is there any obvious indication that there's fraud going on somewhere here? And the auditor is going to be interested in that just because it affects, obviously, whether the financial statements are correct or not if there's fraud going on in an organization. So the biggest part from the organization's standpoint, the biggest part of the audit is the fieldwork. It's when the auditor's there, he's pulling out papers, he's looking for stuff, he's wanting to see receipts and things like that. After that, there is what I call the correspondence period. It's the period where it's like, oh yeah, I forgot to tell him about that. I bet he should know about that. It's a period of time where the audit report's being drafted, the auditor's working behind the scenes doing a lot of checklists and so forth. I always wondered what they do during that time, because it can be a month from the time they're there until they finally issue the audit report. And I'm like, okay, obviously they're working for other organizations too, but what are they doing? I got a little more respect for it when the auditor said, well, okay, here's what I'm doing. See this checklist? I'm going through this to make sure that we disclosed everything we need to in the financial reports. I said, oh, that's 80 pages long. Okay, yeah, you are serving something between when I hand over the records and when you issue the financial report. Now, auditors have their own ways of doing this. They have various things they do and so forth, but that's the kind of thing they're doing. They're going through and saying, okay, did we ask all the necessary questions? Did we look at all the necessary documents? Are we disclosing everything in those notes that I mentioned that are in the financial report? Are we disclosing everything that is required to be disclosed? Because auditors are highly regulated by a set of rules that have to be followed as an auditor. And auditors, believe it or not, are also audited. There's peer reviews where auditors are looking at each other's books and making sure that these are in the file. If this isn't in the file, or you know something similar to it, that's an indication that the auditor's not doing his job. And so there is accountability there as well, and they're making sure that each other is being held to a high standard of auditing. After the audit is prepared, they generally will send it to you for your review, so you can look over it and see if there's any obvious errors to it or something like that. And then they will then do the audit presentation where they actually present the report to the board. Generally sit down with the board and say, okay, here's a financial report, we'll run over it, and if the board has any questions and so forth. They will also at that point let the board know if there's any obvious internal controls that are missing. For a lot of small organizations, just to warn you, they're going to say that you don't have enough people involved in the process. It's very standard for small organizations because you're not going to have 10 people, you know, where one person gets the bill and the next person enters it, the next person pays it, the next person signs the checks, and the next person mails the checks, and the next person, you know, you don't have that many people in the office in a lot of the smaller organizations. And so they're very likely to say, you know, we really don't think there's enough people involved. Now, that's not them saying that you're doing anything wrong, really. They're simply saying that you really should have more people involved.
Yeah, and we see that a lot. And it's not nothing negative toward the organization. They just don't have the numbers of staff people to basically segregate out accounting duties into different pockets to where they're obviously, that's the kind of the accounting goal, but obviously it's not always possible.
Right. our auditor sits down and says, and this next note, we have to put it in here. There's not really anything wrong, but we have to put it in here. It's that kind of thing. And then generally the preparation of an audit report is going to be combined with the preparation of your Form 990. If you're a nonprofit organization, they have all your records already. It makes by far the most sense to have them do your 990 at the same time. So that generally for a 501c3, the 990 typically goes along with the audit report. So how can you prepare for an audit? Last fall, I was on staff at Faith Builders until last summer, trained in my replacement, and I'm now doing tax and accounting work. I'm in business, but they requested that I be present for the audit field work and so forth to interact with the auditor, and so I said, sure, that's no problem, and so we set a date and all that. I completely forgot about that date. So I'm sitting down in my office at home, and I just sat down. You know, you open up your email, and you're getting the day started, and I get a call from Faith Builders. Hey, just so you're remembering that the auditors are here. No, I didn't remember that. But I'll be there in 5 minutes. So I show up. And I had not prepared. I had not pulled the stuff he had requested. I had not gotten ready for this audit. But guess what? It actually went very smoothly. I wasn't sure how this was going to go. But I will say that it only went smoothly because there were the necessary procedures in place to have the records ready. That if the auditor walks in and wants to see them, they're there. You know, it's not a big deal. It's not like we have to do a whole bunch of preparing for him, because we are operating our organization in a way that is prepared. So what's that look like? It looks like a good filing system. Do you have your receipts filed in a way that the auditor can make sense of them? If he goes to wants to see receipts, he can actually pull the receipts himself if he wants to. Do you have consistent records? Do you do consistent data entry, so things are getting entered the same way every time? It's not that one time it gets entered one way and the next time it gets entered a different way and things like that. Are things systematized? Do you have systems in place that make sense to the auditor? Another very good way of preparing for an audit is communicate with the auditor. So, like I mentioned, what's he need before he gets here? And designate a point person. So have one person that communicates with the auditor and, make sure that he knows what's going on. Ask the auditor what he needs logistically. Increasingly, auditors have all the records on the cloud, and so they're going to need internet access when they show up. They're going to, are they expecting lunch or are they, going out to eat? Are they going to be there overnight? Are they, think about the logistical needs for the auditor. This isn't just about financing. He's a person too. So, give him a convenient, quiet room to work in so he can do his job efficiently and keep his costs and your costs down. And I would say plan to serve the auditor hand and foot while he or she is at your office. I'm amazed how much time it can be taken just pulling the records that he needs. I think, I pretty much have everything that he needs. Well, what about this? What about that? You're just running around pulling documents for him. So don't plan to do much other than the audit field work the days that he's in the office. So that's just very briefly a lot more to be said about how to prepare for an audit. I wanted to talk about benefiting from an audit report. So you spend all this money for the audit, and you get the report, but what good is this? It goes on the shelf, and good, we got an audit. Well, yeah, that is actually one of the benefits, is that, yes, you had an audit now, and the auditor says your records look good, and so you can have the peace of mind that there's an independent person looking at the books and believes that your records are accurate. But one of the things you can do to use the audit report, the first thing is to make sure you understand what it's saying about your organization. So read the financial footnotes. Do they accurately say what your organization does? Do they reflect reality? And do they make sense? If they don't make sense, ask questions. excuse me. Use the audit process to develop better internal controls, I think is probably one of the biggest things that I would encourage. So when the auditor is there and he says, how do you handle donations? Tell him how you handle donations and then turn it around and say, okay, but how should we handle donations? What are your recommendations based on our organization? What would you recommend for how we do these things in our organization? And he's going to be able to tell you, the church down the road does it this way, and that's a really good idea. Hey, you've just learned something from the church down the road, thanks to your audit. The other organizations handle things this way. Other organizations process things this way. Ask questions. The auditor, you're paying for the auditor. Take advantage of his time. While he's there, asking questions and learn what you can, especially in relation to internal controls. Because that's often where organizations struggle to be up to where they should be in terms of an audit and so forth is the internal control. So what processes do you have in place? How do you process things and so forth? Very briefly, a few considerations that I have on the bottom there. Considerations when selecting an auditor. One of the things to think about is who will they compare your organization to? So are you hiring an auditor that does a lot of nonprofits in your area? They do the YMCA, they do the Catholic Church, they do your organization. Is that who they're comparing you to, and is that who you want them to compare you to? Maybe you want to get an auditor from out of state that does a lot of Anabaptist organizations. You might want the auditor to look at your organization and think, this other Anabaptist organization does it this way. Maybe that's what you want. It kind of depends what you're looking for in the audit as to who you might want to be compared to. They are not officially comparing you, in the reports, but in the back of their minds, they're going to be thinking about other organizations. What are the other organizations that they do, and who are they comparing you to? Is this an auditor that does a lot of nonprofit organizations? Is this an auditor that mostly does tax work for for-profit businesses, but they do a little bit of nonprofit work? Might want to shy away from them a little more, but not saying that broad range of experience can't be of assistance to them, too. And then, of course, there's a question of fees. And I will say that not all auditors charge the same fees, but I would not put fees at the top for when you select an auditor. Well, who's going to give us the cheapest audit? We'll go with him. Excuse me. As I've mentioned several times, auditors are not all the same in the amount of work they do and in the value that they provide to your organization. One of the questions that people often ask, I'm really going to stick my neck out here, but one of the questions people often ask is, how much does an audit cost? And that, I will say, varies a lot depending on the size of your organization. A number of places that I have read say that you should plan on at least $5,000 for an audit, just because of the level of complexity that is involved in the audit report and so forth.
A lot of that, again, depends about the organization itself. For instance, if you have an organization that only receives donations, cash donations, in some ways that's much easier to audit than if it's a mix and they get a lot of non-cash donations, then your complexities go out the roof in terms of audit.
Right. Good point. It's going to depend, and it's also going to depend on how well you have your records in order. They have to do a lot of adjustments.
Another point is that, you know, we've, over the years, worked with a number of smaller Anabaptist organizations who, when we first started, we basically said, okay, we're not going to be able to audit you right now. We're going to have to work with you to get you where you can even be audited in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles. And so sometimes that may be 1 or 2 years to get them where they can even be in a position to deal with all the issues that they have to deal with. Because when you're working with a generally accepted accounting principles, you're not dealing with cash in, cash out. You have to deal with a whole lot more broader accounting issues than just cash in, cash out.
Right. So, the cost of the audit is going to vary a lot. Get a couple audit quotes. Find out where you're at as far as an organization. Another way you can benefit from an audit, another possibility, is to incorporate it into your annual report. So you're probably familiar with the Christian Aid's annual report that they send out. I will say that a lot of this is not strictly their audit report, but at the end they always have the official audit report. How many of the people read this? I have no idea. I would guess not very many, or they'd probably print it in larger print. But it is a sign of integrity. So I look at this and I say, okay, they're using a reputable accounting firm. They have their financial statements in a standard format, and they care enough to get somebody to come in every year and check out their organization. It's a stamp of integrity, whether I actually read it or not. So consider incorporating it, or at least put a footnote in your report saying, you know, we get an audit done, you can request a copy if you want it. That type of thing is the approach that FaithBuilders is taking. I'm going to close with that. If you have any questions, I'll be here and be happy to answer questions. Again, Mark is an excellent resource person as well. And thank you for being here. Turn back over to Ryan.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at FaithBuilders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.